Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Dan Ives. He is the Managing Director and Senior Analyst at Wedbush Securities, and he's been on the media talking about Tesla actually for quite a few years now, and he's been really one of the analysts out there really leading the charge, being bullish on Tesla over the years. So I wanted to invite Dan on the show, kind of explain his views, kind of give an outlook for 2022. So Dan, welcome on the show. How are you doing?
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. Super excited to have a conversation here.
Yeah, awesome. Dan, lots of stuff is going on with Tesla. I mean, we had crazy record deliveries just on Sunday. The stock gapped up, and then today, you know, the whole market was down, or at least growth stocks in the NASDAQ. I want to start with just the general market. You know, there's a lot of jitters with the whole Fed, you know, pulling back liquidity, quantitative easing, interest rates going up a bit, growth stocks getting hit. Should investors be concerned? I mean, are your clients concerned at all about 2022 with growth stocks? What's your kind of take on all this?
Yeah, I mean, look, I've covered stocks since, well, late 99 in terms of covering tech, disruptive tech. And I mean, there's no doubt, like the Fed raising rates and tapering, more focus on valuation. You're seeing jitters, especially to start the year, especially areas like software and some of the high multiple names. And of course, EV stocks like Tesla and some others, they're going to get caught in that. But look, my view is that it comes down to the underlying growth and fundamental stories. And I think that's something that's underestimated by the street. So, of course, you're going to have on one side an offset of valuation sensitivities with the Fed raising rates. But I don't view that makes it untouchable to own tech. It's just more selective. It's more of a stock picker's market. I mean, that's ultimately how I view it. But I can tell you, I mean, even the last 48 hours, constant conversations with institutional clients, just getting nervous, especially the way the year started off.
Yeah. With your institutional clients, like, do you generally advise, like, hey, pick the stocks that, for example, that have cash flows or maybe profits rather than the ones that are more speculative? Or do you have any general framework that you share with your clients?
Yeah, look, I think most of our clients over the decades know me as someone that, you know, we do a lot of work in terms of the field, whether it's in software, whether it's disruptive tech with EVs, or other areas of the ecosystem. So really, a lot of that is using me to kind of help, I'll call it handhold periods. You when stocks are going up and to the right, let's use Tesla as an example. Once deliveries come up and they're just off the charts, investors don't really need me for these next 3 to 4 weeks going into earnings. They needed me in November and December to navigate through it in terms of what we saw in terms of our data points coming out of China and Europe. Mm-hmm. So that's an overarching theme. It's like when things are great and stocks are going up, a lot of times investors don't need us as much. It's during the periods, and I think we've been able to over the years sort of navigate periods of white knuckle period where we're able to sort of handhold the selective winners, names to own, don't listen to the noise. And that's why, you know, whether it's Apple or Microsoft going back to when Nadella took over cybersecurity, I think that's how we've sort of built our reputation, at least from an institutional perspective, you know, which has really, you know, helped us out, you know, especially as we focused on more and more areas of tech.
Got it. I want to dive into Tesla now. So we have Tesla's delivery numbers. This came out significantly higher than expectations, 308,600 vehicles. What's your take on this? Like, how did Tesla deliver, you know, so many more vehicles than expected? And follow-up question is, what does this mean for Q4 earnings?
Yeah, I mean, well, first off, when you look at our view was that, you know, going into Q4, I thought best case 275. Now, granted, a lot of our data coming out of China was showing demand was just off the charts. And we also saw that in Europe in terms of just from a logistics perspective, the amount of cars that were being shipped. So a lot of times I think investors think street sandbags numbers intentionally in terms of estimates. Here, 275, best case, 280 would have been wacky. In terms of a number. Also, we estimate about 25,000 to 30,000 cars did not come in the quarter due to the chip shortage and battery shortage. So really, When I saw the 309 number, I basically had to check that like two or three times, over the weekend when it happened, because that was basically about 10, 12% above bull case. And I think in terms of earnings, I think EPS and just underlying profitability, right now trajectory, we're looking at probably a 30 to 40% beat in terms of in the quarter. The trajectory for 22, you'll have some increased expenses, but I think numbers could go up, for 22, probably 20, 25%.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm wondering when you talk about kind of data and your checks, like what data do you have access to that, let's say, a typical individual retail investor might not have access to?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think a lot of our work has always been on the ground. I mean, we've made a lot of trips over the years to Asia and Europe, just trying to understand logistics, in terms of like, I mean, I'll go back to like Europe, just sitting there at the port trying to see how many, ships are coming into Europe to try to have some data point on cars that ultimately they were delivering. China, a big piece, we've done a lot of modeling, a lot of hands-on work in terms of understanding capacity and what the overall demand story looks like in China. And I think that's how we've been able to differentiate ourselves, maybe versus competitors. It's very easy sometimes to just get caught up in the noise. We've been able to sort of, and of course, there's quarters you could be off, but we've been able to almost do a competitive grid on China, where we see overall units, what percent Tesla gets, and what the factory build out looks like, over there in Giga Shanghai. And that's enabled us to maybe within, a pretty small gap to sort of get our overall thesis right in terms of where we thought units. And then that's when we started the year off, even with the chip shortage, and we were telling investors 900,000 was doable. Not, I'd say it was a stretch. And a lot of investors, they'd be like, especially the bears that we talked to, they're like, what type of alcohol are you drinking? That is impossible. All of our data is showing 820, 830. But all of our numbers coming out of Europe, coming out of China, and even in the US were showing that demand was outstripping supply by about 15%.
Got it. So, I mean, percent-wise, like, how much do you rely on just public available, let's say, crowdsourced data from just like, folks on Twitter? Let's say, like, Troy Tesla does a great job with, let's say, delivery numbers, and there's a bunch of people, tracking China numbers, etc. How much percent do you rely on just publicly available stuff versus, let's say, more proprietary private stuff that you guys might be privy to?
I'd say it's probably 60 to 70% of it is our work that we do. But I'm very dialed in to what's going on in the public Twitter and just public Tesla community. I think that's an area that a lot of analysts, they kind of they shove off as noise. I know more than others. Yet I tell you, like in terms of, not just yourself but the community, like I think there's many out there that know more about Tesla than even, a lot of institutional investors. And I think you always have to take everything with a grain of salt, but I think you have to understand the data points and absorb them as much as possible. And look, and we're lucky because we get a lot of data points just really around the world on a daily basis. So I mean, even today, like I got some random data points from some of our contacts in Scandinavia. Now, you're always going to have to kind of stress test them, but pretty bullish data points coming out of Scandinavia from what I'm seeing. And this has been a thesis that we've been building over the last month, and I think that could be expanded as Tesla builds out in Berlin. The other thing that we do is that, obviously, we've made a lot of visits to different factories over the world, not just for Tesla, but other automakers. And we've been able to build, I think, a very strong ecosystem within the automobile and EV world, which is, I think that's given us an advantage to maybe get a better pulse as to, what's happened in terms of the market.
Got it. So I know you have a price target for Tesla, It's $1,400 base, $1,800 bull case. I'm assuming that's what, 12 months out or so?
That's 12 months. I mean,
Okay.
when we start to go further out, I mean, of course, Kathy and others have some longer term bull cases. See, I like to look at it over the next year. The reason I don't like going out 3, 4, 5 years, I like seeing what at least what I can model and some sort of perspective on what's going to happen over the next 6, 9, 12 months. And when I look at Tesla, to me, the big thing has been capacity. I think Berlin and Austin will probably get news later this week. I think that's an underappreciated dynamic in terms of how important the capacity coming on and even the logistics in terms of what's happening in Europe. You know, especially Polestar, VW, and others, it's very important that they get that flagship factory in Berlin versus the Rubik's Cube of shipping them from China. I think the other thing, it's the gross margin story. And Dave, like that's always been a big part of our thesis is that going back to some of the dark years for Tesla, that eventually auto gross margins was going to be able to be 30, 35%. And now the profitability story is starting to come. And I believe you could start to look at $30 earnings power by 25.
Yeah. Yeah, perhaps even much sooner because, I mean, if they deliver, let's say, you know, my numbers right now are $3.20 to $3.40 non-GAAP earnings this quarter. So that's already about a $12 or $13 annualized rate. They might hit $30 maybe in a year and a half. I don't know, annualized.
But that's why, like, I think it's also, I you know, Tesla, and I've seen this with Apple and Amazon, and other disruptive tech, transformational, you count on one hand, paradigm change companies over the last 30 years. I think part of what I hate to see is, let's say, like, Tesla has just a ridiculous jaw dropper, we'll call it trophy case Q4. Then right away, okay, 2 million. That could be the number for 22. Okay, so now all of a sudden, you've created this number, 2 million, and anything short seems negative, which, see, I disagree with that because I view it as like Street was at 1.3 million units.
Sure.
48, 50% growth. If they could do 1.4, 1.5, 1.6, that's a banner year, especially on the EPS. I think part of how the bears, they'll focus on Tesla is that as soon as something good happens, right away, this imaginary goalpost comes out there. And look, and Jonas, huge, you know, love his work and just does an unbelievable job. I think sometimes investors, they'll take analysts kind of putting like a best case goalpost and be like, that's enough. But see, I disagree with that. I think you have to view it as kind of a step function and it's the longer term story in Tesla.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I also think like the 2 million number, you know, I don't think it's realistic for 2022, obviously. But regardless, like anything, you know, like 1.5 million or higher, I mean, you're going to have just crazy earning power, you know, just, and that's just going to shock people, I think.
What I think the thing that's underappreciated is like, look at Farley and Ford doing an unbelievable job on the F-150. Okay, so now they're looking to double to 150,000 per year. So just when you put that in perspective, I mean, Tesla unit capacity would be over 2 million by the end of 22. And I think that is something I've appreciated more and more, you know, seeing what GM, Ford, Rivian, all the EV players probably visited 15 factories in the last 4 or 5 months. The scale that Tesla has, that continues to be a competitive advantage that I think the average investor does not appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You're talking about margins, you know, reaching 30, 35%. Do you think Tesla can reach over 30% gross margin, auto gross margin without regulatory credits this quarter? What's your take?
Well, okay. So my take is that an average car produced and sold in China is 20-25% more profitable than a car produced and sold in the United States, based on our estimates. Mm-hmm. So then that's a tailwind that continues to be there. no doubt credits will start to fade, and that kind of 30% is sort of the line in the sand. I believe they could exceed that just because, look, our view is that 40% plus of deliveries will come out of China in 22. So you start to do the math on that. If you start to get 500,000, 600,000, 800,000 cars being sold and produced, in China, let's say over the next 12 to 18 months, the whole financial profile of Tesla changes. And that's why, and obviously you know this so well, and obviously many of your peers, but I think when I look at, I think some of the bears that try to hit on Tesla, that they'll focus on just pure valuation in terms of where the stock trades today. If you went down that pattern, you would have missed Netflix, Amazon, Apple. I mean, and the list goes on and on. You got to look at full scale 24, 25.
I mean, I wanted to actually, if there's a lot of stuff there, I want to talk about actually your valuation method. But before that, do you think we're talking about margin here and Tesla surprising. Do you think Austin and Berlin will be are underappreciated in terms of the cost efficiencies that they'll achieve and the margins coming out of those factories?
It's the most underappreciated part of the Tesla story today. Like, if you said to me, let's say we leave here, be like, what's the one thing, talking to institutional investors all day, that they don't appreciate? It's not like EV demand, Tesla's brand, units, valuation, China. It's what Austin and Berlin do to the story. Because that, I mean, to me, I think we look back on this year, and I think strategically, it's a top three moment for Tesla in its history.
Interesting. What's your take on 4680? Will Tesla be able to scale, you think, successfully this year, the 4680 sales? And what does that mean for Tesla?
Look, I think that's, I mean, I've always viewed that that's more something that could scale this year and more into 23. And I don't like putting the hourglass time clock on it. If it doesn't happen by December 31st, 2022, it's a failure. My view is they'll have another battery day probably in the summer, potentially sooner, talk about improvements and what they've done there. But I think over time, battery costs, our views over the next 2 to 3 years will decrease by anywhere from 30, 50%. And that's a huge, like, it just goes back to like, that is and continues to be one of the massive competitive advantages that they have along with the scale.
So a couple months ago, I had Gary Black on Twitter, on my show, and he was saying that he had some data that institutional or portfolio managers were underweight Tesla, generally speaking. In your experience, just talking with, institutional clients, generally, like, are they underweighted, Tesla relatively to, their other holdings? And if so, what's kind of the reason or cause of that?
Yeah, look, I think Tesla historically, now of course with the S&P it changed because of the index. So, a lot of institutional investors are forced to own more of it, but I think it's always been a name that's been underweight relative, to where you'd expect it to be. And I think now I think a lot of institutional investors have maybe started to change their tune or maybe play EV through the likes of a Ford, a GM. I think Rivian kind of got maybe a benefit of that trade where it's like institutionally, like if you miss Tesla and then you miss Rivian and Rivian's the mini Tesla, I mean, at that point, maybe it's time to figure out what type of font you're using on the resume. So I think with Tesla, institutionally, it was very difficult to own it before they were profitable, non-tax credit. I think that's like, if you remember, like once they show, if you met the last few quarters, like when they started to show the gross margin outperformance, that changed the whole story. That It's funny, like on that quarter, a lot of times it's about the unit outperformance or the guidance. Is that gross margin story? It's what I've used, the inflection in the whole story. Because then, as an institutional investor, now it's not just like revenues. You're going to do valuation on some, on some other metrics. Now with that gross margin story, you could be like, okay, now we got something. Like, okay, I could be a portfolio manager. I could still hate it, but now there's a barometer, and the goalpost. I think the other thing is that sometimes, like with stocks, there's an emotional piece too. A lot of the sideshow stuff that's gone on, that goes on with Elon and Tesla. It's something where I think more investors now have started to get used to, but maybe you couldn't say that 2 years ago. And I think it's another example of, like, I also think Tesla has started to mature as a company in terms of your communication.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree on the gross margin thing. I mean, that just like speaks volumes to, especially those who are number minded, because you just can't deny that because that's scalable. As revenue scales, if your gross margins are 30% or higher, and then you add on the whole other side, which is the OpEx, which seems like Tesla is keeping that in line. Are you surprised at all at how kind of OpEx hasn't increased as much as perhaps revenue, or is held so steady over the past few years?
Look, I think they've done a great job from like an FP&A perspective, from an expense perspective. I think, and especially if you think about like the last 18 months during COVID, chip shortage, think about the historical sort of issues that Tesla's had. And I think it's been a masterful job. And, I think the other thing is that when you think about some of the sideshows between like Bitcoin, selling stock from Musk, just we'll call them like non-fundamental pieces of Tesla. Sometimes it gives a appearance externally that the company's, maybe kind of like, all over the place, but yet like internally, the operations, it's so much more streamlined, and that's the one thing that we continue to hear, and this is globally, not just in Fremont. I think what they've done in Austin in terms of the build out, what's happened in China, and even, in terms of the way that they've navigated, some of the logistics issues. And I think that's a big part of their success in terms of where they are. But also, it's also not in the past, I think they'd put themselves in a situation like, we need to get Cybertruck out by 2022. You got Ford, GM, Rivian. Now it's just like, okay, look. That's not going to happen. Let's keep an eye on the prize. It's 23. See, that's the difference. The old Tesla would have been 22, and just trying to get there, and maybe some disappointment. I think that's maybe like what I'll call like the new Tesla.
Got it. Okay, so let's say hypothetically, let's say you have a situation where you have a friend, a family member, or someone who's like, "Oh my gosh, I own Tesla, but all my friends are telling me it's overvalued. I don't know what to think of it." What do you tell them to simply explain the valuation of Tesla? Do you first just say, for example, "Don't worry about it. It's a tech company; they'll disrupt," or do you give a certain type of multiple off of, let's say, profits, let's say 12 months or 18 months out, or do you just do more of a discount kind of, just kind of cash flow model where you say in 2025 they'll, or 2030 or something, they'll achieve this type of revenue, profits, and discount it back? What's your kind of approach or explanation there?
Well, first off, I feel like every investor has to understand like the risks in the general market. I mean, even if you think about the last few years, like stocks have generally gone up and to the right. But obviously, I've done this since '99. Like, I could tell you some dark periods and some dark stories from 2000, 2001, 2002, and even through the financial crisis, where a lot of, we're not talking institution, but retail investors, it's some pretty sad stories. So I do think every investor has to understand their own risk profile in terms of what they're willing to risk and whatever their life situation is. from a valuation, I think it's important that every investor like does their own homework. Because sometimes when you get into the groupthink mentality, everyone owns at the same time and then they head for the elevators at the same time. That creates opportunities and challenges as well. So I think from a valuation, like you got to look at 25 earnings. You also got to do a discount cash flow to understand like down the road where, remember, it's playing base case, best case, worst case, but like, where could ultimately the story go? Is robotaxis going to happen? Is FSD going to happen? What's the regulatory risk? And I feel like you start to put in a bucket in terms of where it's going to play. And like, and also I think it's one where like you have to understand some near-term risk, like as we saw with Musk selling stock, as you'll see with increased competition, recalls, whatever it may be. But I think that, but it goes back to like that creates the opportunities as well. And that's why I think like you talk about like in Tesla community, like I really, and I love getting feedback from investors, both the lovers and the haters, because I don't view it emotional. I view it like just, it's a data point driven. But I do think you want like sometimes like you can't make it like an emotional decision. I think you have to separate between the emotion and the actual stock. And that's an important dynamic.
Got it. You mentioned risk. What do you think is the biggest risk factor for Tesla in 2022?
So I think there's three biggest risks outside of exogenous things. One is any hiccups with Berlin and Austin in terms of the build-out from component, from labor, some of the bureaucracy in Austin. And those are like, I put that in like the first like risk bucket. Two, China. I mean, like if you look at China, it's a friend and a foe. So with all the regulatory that's gone on between Alibaba, Baidu, China tech's been a disaster because of Big Brother in Beijing. Any regulatory walls caving in China, and that's something I think earlier in 2021 that was a huge issue from the Shanghai Auto Show to the safety, the PR. That's why I always talk about like it's important Musk plays nice in the sandbox with Beijing. So I think that's the second biggest risk. I think the third biggest risk is just comes down to like, we need to make sure now that like supply chain issues, chip short moderates. Now we believe it's moderating in first half. I think you saw a great, obviously a great Q4. But if you go down to like, okay, let's say if there's variant issues, factories close, extends the supply chain issues. Those to me are the three biggest risks to the Tesla story. I don't lump things like Fed raising rates, risk off. I mean, you could say that across the market, across tech.
Sure. What do you think about with the supply chain challenges? Overall, the whole new and used car market is just the supply is so limited. Prices are just skyrocketing. Do you see this leveling off anytime soon? Are new and used car prices going to come down? And then will and then sub and a follow-up question is, A, will Tesla have to lower their prices if car prices come down?
Yeah, I think by July, August, that dynamic starts to come down because our view of chip shortage starts to moderate February, March, and then there's a 6 month lag. If you look at like data points through Carvana and others, a lot of things that we do here at Wedbush with clients, like our view is like second half of the year starts to moderate. I think from a pricing perspective, they gotta be careful with pricing, but it's similar to Netflix or an Apple or a Chipotle, whatever you want to call it. Like the elasticity. Right now, Tesla's in a position of strength from raising prices. And I think it's something where there's a sweet spot that you don't want to mess with in terms of, kind of outpricing yourself out of the market. But right now, I still think they have flexibility for, call it 3, 4, 5% type price increases.
Got it. It seems like a lot of people, investors, institutions are, you know, getting excited about Ford and GM a bit with their, you know, prospects in the future. But I mean, my question is, how can they compete with Tesla long term? Can they actually make EVs, like, you know, in the same, you know, I guess, level that Tesla makes it with the same margins? Or like, how do you view GM and Ford's prospects going forward?
Okay, so I think it's like a good point, because a lot of times, like, I'll see, like, I'll get Twitter thing, like, you know, I get like a lot of messages, like, because we're bullish and let's say GM and Ford on the EV re-rating. Mm-hmm. And investors be like, oh, you lost all credibility that you're okay, you have to separate. Like, I'm a Giants fan. If the Giants get a new quarterback, it's better than Daniel Jones, in my opinion. It's not a Mahomes. That's what Tesla is. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I don't view it that it's like GM Ford, they're going to compete with I just view, like, you have 3% automobiles today that are EVs. That's going to 10% by 25, 25% by 2030. Tesla market share is going to continue to be ridiculous in terms of that iron fence. But if you look at Ford and GM, they are traded and they're viewed in the market as automobile stocks. EBITDA, book value, Tesla's disruptive tech, whether it's on REV, some of the parts. You got to separate between, okay, is there an opportunity to stock, or are they going to, like, take over another company? Ford and GM, the call very simply is, if they get 50% of it right, the stocks are both doubles. That's not negative for Tesla. Mm-hmm. I just want to, like, point that out. Yeah. In terms of my view of the market. Like, it's not just, I think sometimes there's confusion there being like, well, it's GM and Ford, that means it's negative for Tesla. No, I mean, I could argue GM and Ford being stars there in the United States, them going fully EV, CES being all about EV, indirectly, that's a positive for Tesla.
Yeah. I mean, do you see, let's say the year is 2030, do you think Ford and GM are doing pretty well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in my view,
I think,
and we've talked about it from a stock perspective, like, I think these are both massive opportunities. Just because, if they could be successful converting 10, 20% of their customer base, the traditional automobile business for a GM and Ford, I could have sounded $0. Just based on EVs, these are stocks that move much higher. And I think that's why you're seeing, like, why is Ford up like it is today? Why is GM like it is up? Because what you're seeing in terms of EV news, it just shows the sensitivity to the stock is so much more significant relative to where the stock trade. I'll just give you an example, like Microsoft. Yeah. Cover Microsoft since 2000. When Nadella took over, CEO, cloud transition. Investors like, no way. It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. But look what happened. Just by him transforming Microsoft, step by step, Microsoft is not going to be a data dog, a snowflake, but just based on that disruptive tech, Microsoft went from 40 to what I view is ultimately going to be 400. It's a 10 bagger.
Sure. I mean, yeah, Microsoft has been an amazing story. But I mean, okay, if you would entertain this, thought here, Tesla releases, let's say their Gen 4, their $25,000, you know, car. Why would anyone in the world want to buy a GM or Ford? Like, what's the appeal? Like, I can understand, like, for example, some analogies, but to me, it's the analogy of more like the iPhone has come out. Why would anyone want a Nokia? Sure, maybe the first year or two, like, the iPhone is a bit pricey, but once the iPhone becomes, like, you know, similar priced as the other phones, the Nokia is dead. I mean, how is GM and Ford going to, you know, produce a product once Tesla, you know, starts to eat away on the lower priced cars?
Sure.
What room do they have?
It's a great question. I think you got to separate out the markets. Pickup trucks, F-150. Mm-hmm. I mean, many view that as, like, they're an F-150 person no matter what. So the point is, like, pickups, you look at what Ford will own that market. Now, Rivian will be a disruptor there too. That's 900,000 vehicles sold per year in terms of Ford. When you start to look at GM, okay, take Hummer on the high end or Silverado. Cadillac, I think, is a key launch in terms of for GM. I think you have to parse it out. In other words, as Tesla goes lower down the food chain in terms of 25, 30,000, they're going to gain significant share versus maybe where a Ford or GM would like to be. But Dave, I view it kind of like cloud.
Yeah.
In other words, Amazon and Microsoft, one and two.
Okay.
If
Yeah. Sorry. I don't want to cut you off, but yeah,
No,
continue. Yeah.
but I'm just saying, like, for Google, it was never about they're going to unseat Amazon and Microsoft. It was, can they be a third player? Could IBM be? If Oracle's a fifth player, then the stock re-rates 50%. I'm just saying, like, the success level for GM and Ford, I view it as kind of like in a box. They're not, Tesla's going to continue to massively own this market. That I think it's contained success that they'll both find.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, so another angle is this idea that you call Tesla disruptive tech, but Ford and GM were autos. But isn't the nature of disruptive tech to disrupt? Wouldn't Tesla, by nature of being disruptive, disrupt Ford and GM to
Oh,
the
of course.
point? Yeah, like for example, with the pickup truck market, can't Tesla, come out with a not a Cybertruck, but even a small, medium, and large pickup truck? And where's the market for, Ford's electric, whatever, F-150, if Tesla just, I mean, can Ford really make an F-150 that compares to, let's say, a new generation of Tesla's, pickup trucks that are conventional designed, small, medium, large, lower price, better range, better performance? I mean, how can a
They can't
non-disruptive
match
tech
up.
Yeah, how can a non-disruptive tech company beat a disruptive tech company? I guess that's the
They
question.
but they can't. In other words, like, it's why my view is, like, when I say, and also when I say disruptive tech, really, just even to, like, peel away the onion, Tesla's vertical integration, the software piece. You buy a car for 50,000, you buy software for 10,000. That's a key part of the story that no other automaker in the world has. Now, Rivian's trying to get there, GM's trying to get there, Ford's trying to get there. That's why when we talk about for the Tesla story, the pickup truck market, forget long haul. I know it's like long haul truck is still more, that's not an area. Like, if that happens for Tesla, great, but that's not something that I kind of factor in. To me, it's really about them getting into the broader, whether it's sport utility, roadster, pickup truck. Because that's, see, those are the areas of the market. Now, of course, you have Model 3 and especially on Model Y. But in terms of, like, Ford, GM, it's not just Ford, GM, VW. You look at what Polestar is doing in Europe, starting to have success. Right now, Tesla really has an ironclad ownership of the EV market. I think the next step, it's almost like, think about this. Capacity, step one. Step two, 4680 battery technology. Once you get A and B by, let's say, early 2023, then they take the wrappings on everything else off. Then you're going to have probably 3 to 4 model launches between 2023, 2024. And then my view, that's in our view how Tesla ultimately goes to, we're talking 10, 12, 14 million units annually in terms of where it's going to go. And that's why, look, and that's why my view is, like, you start to do some of the math, they're going to have some challenges. You start to do some of the math in terms of where earnings power could go, it starts to get pretty wacky in a good way.
Yeah, definitely. Apple Car, do you think Apple releases a electric car? And if so, is it a competitive threat, you think, to Tesla?
Well, I don't think it's competitive. It goes back to, like, the whole zero-sum game. Like, I view Tesla as where Apple is in smartphone. You're going to have other competition, but Tesla, I don't view as just, I don't view that as necessarily a competitive issue. My view on Apple, that, you know, this is something Project Titan been, you know, back and forth. They've had departures. You know, it's a matter, they are going to release a car by 2025. So I don't think, I think it's, I view it more as a when, not if. But my view is that that's not a car that's going to be ultimately produced all Apple. I think it's going to be a partner in terms of how they're going to go after it. We talked about Ford potentially as a partner. VW is potentially as a partner. For them, it's more about the software vertical integration and the FSD. But I don't view Apple getting into the car business by 2025 as a negative for Tesla. I view it actually as a positive because the only way that we're going to get 25, 30, 35% penetration of EVs is overall autos. You need to have more and more automobiles out there that are EV because then the average Dan, Dave, Gene, whoever it may be, they look at the competition and then they go into a Tesla, whatever, show, you know, they see a Tesla car on the road and they compare it from a price point perspective. And that's why, I mean, 8 of 10 times, Tesla's going to win those deals with the 80% share.
Hey, final question. So 2022, what are your top picks? Like maybe if you can give like your top three or four, just like maybe names that you're just interested, you think have potential for the year. Just what do you what's attractive to
Sure.
you?
So let me just like break it down to like different areas. So first, like in terms of like EV disruptive tech. Now, look, Tesla continues to be ours, our favorite, but going down the food, I really want to play the commercial angle, though, that last mile. There's some diamonds in the rough, in my view, in terms of how they're playing it. I really like this Xos, which is a commercial play, as more fleets convert to last mile on the electric side, as well as electric last mile and Xos are my two favorites there. I love this Wejo, which is a disruptive auto data play. I think that's a super interesting name, really starting to monetize, you know, the ultimate space. And that's, I think, a stock that could really work in terms of disruptive tech. Software, we continue. The two areas that we really want to play are cloud and cybersecurity. You know, our favorite names have been Microsoft. We love Zscaler or Tenable, Palo Alto in terms of cybersecurity. And then Apple continues to be our favorite in terms of overall FAANG names. Look, my view is like we'll go through some white knuckle. I think tech stocks year end are up 20%, but it's more of a stock picker's market because of the Fed valuation sensitivity, you know, which is our view going into the year.
Dan, it's been fun, man. It's been great
That
chatting
has
with
been
you,
great.
and getting to know you. Actually, I really appreciate you just coming on, extending your knowledge, to me and to my viewers, because I think sometimes there's a gap between retailers and institutional investors. But I think you bring a lot to the table, and I appreciate just your insight. You're just constantly sharing lots of interesting things about Tesla. So yeah, definitely
And
appreciate that.
to you too, and your community, because I would tell you like vice versa. Like it was like the retail passion for Tesla has actually it's helped me like understand better the Tesla story over the last decade. When I go to, you know, we get invited to all these like, well, I mean, obviously pre-COVID, like all the Tesla launches, right? You know, in the different factories or SpaceX or wherever they are. And I love just being there and just listening and watching the passionate Tesla, you know, sort of loyalists because it's helped me learn. I wouldn't be where I am in terms of like my knowledge and kind of, you know, maybe my sort of view of Tesla, you know, if it wasn't for retail, because I think that's from a data point perspective better help me appreciate. And I think that's somewhere a lot of people in my position, they view a lot of that as noise. And I think that's been their mistake.
Yeah. Awesome, man. I'll go ahead and link to your Twitter profile in the video description so
Great.
people can find that. And anything else people can
No,
learn
and look,
about you more?
and just I'd like to do this, you know, whenever you wanna, you know, it could come, if an event happens that's maybe, you know, good or bad, you know, we could talk about it. And I think, look, it's what. I mean, I cover many stocks. I've covered whatever, 50, 60, 70 public stocks, you know, over the last 21 years. And I think Tesla, it's unique for all of us because I think we're watching a fourth industrial revolution play out. And I think it's something like ultimately to tell my grandkids about, in the decades ahead, in terms of what we're seeing in terms of really a modern day phenomenon in terms of that's being built out.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'd love to do it again, actually. Yeah, I'll take you up, I think, on that offer. All right, thanks,
Great.
Dan. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All
Take
right, see
care.
ya.